He puts his coffee cup in the sink and leaves me holding this information, knowing sooner or later it will force me to my knees.
Sarah, 1997. No matter how many times you drive to the emergency room, it never becomes routine. Brian carries our daughter in his arms, blood running down her face. The triage nurse waves us inside, shepherds the other kids to the bank of plastic chairs where they can wait. A resident comes into the cubicle, all business. What happened? She went over the handlebars of her bike, I said. She landed on concrete. There doesn't seem to be any evidence of concussion, but there's a scalp lass at the hairline of about an inch and a half. The doctor lays her down gently on the table, snaps on gloves, and peers at her forehead. Are you a doctor or a nurse? I try to smile. Just used to this. It takes 82 stitches to sew up the gash. Afterward, with a bright white patch of gauze taped to her head and a hefty dose of pediatric Tylenol swimming through her veins, we walk out to the waiting area, hand in hand. Jessie asks her how many stitches she needed. Brian tells her she was just as brave as a firefighter. Kate glances at Anna's fresh bandage. I like it better when I get to sit out here, she says. It starts when Kate screams in the bathroom. I race upstairs and jimmy the lock to find my 9-year-old standing in front of a toilet spattered with blood. Blood runs down her legs, too, and has soaked through her underpants. This is the calling card for APL, hemorrhage in all sorts of masks and disguises. Kate's had rectal bleeding before, but she was a toddler. She would not remember. It's all right, I say calmly. I get a warm washcloth to clean her up and find a sanitary napkin for her underwear. I watch her try to position the bulk of the pad between her legs. This is the moment I would have had with her when she got her period. Will she live long enough for that? Mom, Kate says, it's back. Clinical relapse. Dr. Chance takes off his glasses and presses his thumbs to the corners of his eyes. I think a bone marrow transplant's the way to go. My mind jumps to a memory of an inflatable Bozo punching bag I had when I was Anna's age, filled with sand at the bottom. I'd whack it only to have it pop back up. But a few months ago, Brian says, you told us they were dangerous. They are. 50% of patients who receive BMTs are cured. The other half don't survive the chemo and the radiation leading up to the transplant. Some are killed by the complications they develop after the transplant's done. Brian looks at me and then speaks the fear that ripples between us. Then why would we even put Kate at risk? Because if you don't, Dr. Chance explains, she will die. The first time I call the insurance company, they hang up on me by mistake. The second time, I wait through Muzak for 22 minutes before reaching a customer service representative. Can I have your policy number? I give her the one all municipal employees get and Brian's social security number. How can I help you? I spoke to someone there a week ago, I explain. My daughter has leukemia and needs a bone marrow transplant. The hospital explained that our insurance company needs to sign off on coverage. A bone marrow transplant costs from $100,000 upward. Needless to say, we don't have that kind of cash lying around. But just because a doctor has recommended the transplant doesn't mean that our insurance company will agree. That sort of procedure needs a special review. Yes, I know. That's where we were a week ago. I'm calling because I haven't heard back from you yet. She puts me on hold so that she can look up my file. I hear a subtle click and then the tinny voice of a recorded operator. If you'd like to make a call. Shit! I slam down the phone. Anna, vigilant, pokes her head around the doorway. You said a bad word. I know. I pick up the receiver and hit the redial button. I wind my way through the touch-tone menu. Finally, I reach a living person. I was just disconnected. Again.